Good morning, everybody. First of all, I would like to thank Ronnie and Kathleen for inviting me to this Congress. I'm a bit out of my comfort zone here, but it's my intention, as I have been asked, to introduce you to the Belgian-British art dealer Ernest Gambart as well as possible. Before I take you on a short walk through Gambart's life, I would literally like to put him on the map, showing you the places where he lived. I will then go on to discuss the various art dealing techniques he used that led to his successful career. Ernest Gambart was born in Kortrijk on 12 October 1814. His father, Joseph Gambart, had a bookshop, printing office and a cabinet littéraire. His mother, Catherine Apolline Cartelier-Gourval, comes from a French town, Montargis. Ernest spent his childhood and youth in Kortrijk. He had artistic talents from an early age. During his school years at the St. Anna School, we see that he was skilled in drawing. His painting lessons, which he received from the Kortrijk-based Jean-Baptiste Davloz, also point to his artistic skills. It is therefore not surprising that Ernest, immediately after his schooling, starts working for his father. He becomes the vignettist of the company, who draws and engraves all the motifs of the vignettes. Both Ernest's parents worked in Paris before their marriage in 1814. The eldest sister of Ernest already had her own business in Paris in 1830, so it is not surprising that Ernest is sent to Paris by his father for further education. In the records of the militia of Kortrijk, dating from 1833, he is described as a paper manufacturer living in Paris. When Ernest gets the opportunity to settle in the capital city of France, he decides to stay and takes the chance to develop his professional career and build up his own business. Several sources I crossed during my research provide new information for this period. The years 1837 and 1839 are crucial for his career in Paris. In 1837, Ernest moved to the Rue Homer and works there together with a printer-lithographer named Lazare. He further develops his technical skills and specialized in the production of cardboard toys. During Ernest's Parisian stay, his father is accused of fraudulent practices, is declared bankrupt, and becomes embroiled in various lawsuits. He was actually found guilty and had to serve a sentence until 1844. It is clear that Gambart Jr. assisted his father and the other family members, both morally and financially, at the cost of his own business, which he has to stop at the end of 1838. But in 1839, Ernest associates himself with Augustin Lazare Junin, who wanted to revive the little prosperous company of Gambart. Ernest provided the know-how and material, and Junin provided the money. But Ernest was accused in that year, like his father, of fraud through the possession of printing stones and presses without a license, luckily without a conviction. The first print published at the Rue Homer, to which Gambart's name can be linked, are also dated from 1839. Unfortunately, the firm Gambart et Junin was declared bankrupt that same year. But Gambart was ambitious and did not give up. On the advice of Theodore Vibert, son-in-law of the engraver Jazet and associate of the print publisher Goupy, Ernest leaves for England in 1840 to find his luck. Gambart's activities during the first 10 years in the United Kingdom are characterized by his print trade. At first, he traveled around selling other people's print, but soon in 1842, he settled in London and published prints himself. He did this under the name Gambart and Junin, together with his business partner Junin, with whom he had previously produced mainly cardboard toys in Paris. From then on, they specialized in the import and export of art prints and also published prints in cooperation with other large international print publishers, including the firm Goupy and Vibert. In this way, they were able to circumvent import duties and improve their own trade. Gambart and Junin were first established in Denmark Street and then in Berner Street. In addition to their establishment in London, they retained their address in Paris in the Rue Homer. Between 1843 and 1845, they temporarily operated under a different name, the Anaglyptic Company. Ernest Gambart also quickly received professional assistance in London from his younger brother Gustave, who lived in England since 1845. And on 1 July 1846, Ernest applied to become a British citizen. Gambart's business partner, Junin, died in 1847 at the age of 62. After Junin's death, Gambart continued to trade under his own name and devoted himself increasingly to the organizations of exhibitions and the sales of paintings. Before he starts his so-called French gallery in Palmal in 1854 with two large exhibitions a year, he was already involved in the organization of other exhibitions, such as those of the Amateur Artist Gallery. This gallery seems to have been a kind of predecessor of the French gallery and was moreover located at the same address. With his French gallery, the dealer eventually emerged as a real gallery owner with a strategy, and he put the profession of an art dealer on the map. The print trade gradually declined and the painting trade gained the upper hand, although both went hand in hand in the concept of Gambart's art trade. In addition to business, Gambart was also a bon vivant and loved to party and dress up. He remained a master host even after his departure from London when he left his gallery to Henry Wallace in 1867 and his business to his nephew, Léon Lefebvre, and Franz Joseph Pilgrim in 1870. Despite the fact that Gambart left his business, he remained very active for the next 30 years of his life. He left London from the early 1870s and lived alternately in Spa in Belgium and on the Côte d'Azur in Nice, in his splendid villas, the Château d'Alsace and the Villa Le Palmier, places of entertainment where the top of the international art world and high society was invited to parties, receptions, music performance, and the place to be for networking. Apart from these five cities, Kortrijk, Paris, London, Spa, and Nice, where Gambart stayed during his life, we should mention here that he never stayed long in one place. He was always on the move and traveled a lot, from Belgium to France, via the Netherlands, Germany, Switzerland, Austria, Italy, Greece, including England and Scotland, to Egypt, Turkey, but also to the north, to Sweden, Denmark, and Norway. We can consider him as a real globetrotter, and in the context of this congress about art and water as a common theme, I have to say that Gambart often visited bathing and or spa towns or towns near a lake, water source, or a city through which a river flowed. But let us focus now on the art dealing techniques that Gambart used. We have divided them into four categories: the mass production of prints, the function of exhibitions, art critics as commercial agents, and the auction market. Gambart is fully aware that if he wanted to make a reproduction of paintings that had great appeal to the public, the permission of the copyright holder, especially the artist, is required. By acquiring this permission, the dealer sees the possibilities of buying and selling valuable and desirable prints. The catalogue of the auction in 1847, just after the death of Gambart's partner Junin, mentions, in addition to the prints themselves, also letters of agreement. They were bought back in their entirety by Gambart, and these contracts with artists most probably concerning copyright, were of great importance for Gombard's business model. In this way, he created a kind of exclusive right to produce and sell a certain print. Gombard is also one of the founding members of the Print Sellers Association, established in 1847 in England to protect the print trade. The members must register their prints. But there is also criticism of the monopoly position of this association. The history of copyright protection of the visual art is very complex, and due to lack of time, we cannot really go into this in depth. But we can explain that the ownership of copyright by print publishers was firstly a key to securing economic fortunes, and secondly, the ownership of copyright was also important to the status of a print publisher. The reputation of a publisher was determined by the fame of the prints produced. But we must point out that there were some problems with photographic reproductions. Print publishers, such as Gombard, had to protect the copyright, which has been acquired at great expense against artistic piracy. In the 1815s and 1816s, for instance, Gombard and other publishers brought many lawsuits against photographers who were marketing cheap photo prints. In some cases, Gombard wins, but loses others. The result is that Gombard himself undertakes an attempt to reform the law. In 1863, he held a meeting about this topic in his French gallery. And the same year, he also wrote a pamphlet against these illegal reproductions entitled On Piracy of Artistic Copyright, and he argued for a better copyright law. From the early 1850s onward, Gombard developed into a painting dealer with the establishment of the French Gallery. From then on, he also used printmaking as a means of promoting his favorite artist. Alongside English artist, Gombard is a trendsetter in England with the work of continental contemporaries. He explodes the combination of trade in print reproductions and paintings to the maximum, thanks to his painting tours at home and abroad. These tours are commercially exploited. After having seen the original with an admission ticket, the enthusiastic can buy a print as souvenir. Gombard is very aware of the special link between reproducing a work and exhibiting it. Sometimes the exhibition of a work is the occasion for a reproduction. Other times, an exhibition of the work is organized on the occasion of a new reproduction. We can conclude that 19th century art reproduction was first of all a transnational phenomenon. Many art dealers and publishers had an international orientation, and reproductions brought the name and the fame of the artist far beyond the borders. Firms opened several branches, and activities developed beyond Europe. There was extensive traffic between the firm's various branches, and Gombard had a constant connection between his branches in Paris and London. Secondly, the print market, through firms such as Gombard, expanded as part of the developing art market. The art dealers seldom limit themselves to a single product, but often make a combination of both. Gombard ingeniously managed to combine printmaking and painting, yes. It is clear that the making of prints goes hand in hand or is inseparable from the exhibition policy of Gombard. Exhibiting has long been the strategy of displaying artistic production to the public, facilitating critical comment and consumption, and also building a reputation. In the 19th century, there were two circuits for artists to exhibit their work, the officials and the commercial exhibitions. The latter category included the exhibitions at the French Gallery of Gombard. The two annual events organized there, namely the winter exhibitions and the French exhibitions, are the cornerstones of the public identity of Gambart's gallery. However, they are not the only exhibitions that Gambart organized there. There were also individual exhibitions of prominent paintings, solo exhibitions, and thematic exhibitions. The key to the commercial success of a new artwork is not to exhibit it at an official exhibition, but to present it in premiere at a particular place and time under the dealer's control. Often, there is an ambivalent relationship between dealers and artists. On the one hand, the artists do not want to depend on the dealer, but on the other hand, they can benefit financially from the intervention of the dealers. It is not easy to maintain the balance between the two, because Gambart also interferes sometimes during the creation of the artwork. Gambart had a good nose for selecting works of art that do well in the art market. As a result of the fact that a large part of the trade is in his hand, the works of artists are increasingly becoming a brand in themselves with the necessary branding attached. Not only does he deal in the work of great British stars, but he is also the first to organize regular exhibitions of work by contemporary continental artists. Because Gambart knows what he can sell, he encourages artists to produce more of what sells well. And in this way, artists became the public's representatives of a certain type of subjects. For example, animals by Rosa Bonheur, scenes from antiquity by Alma Tadema. Gambart becomes rich by capitalizing on what is popular, but the artists themselves also often benefit. Nevertheless, sometimes it no longer clicks with certain artists. Gambart should not impress the bourgeoisie, but only please them, identify the kind of paintings they like, and provide them with them in increasing numbers. He deals only in contemporary artists and thus has to defend them in order to increase their popularity and their prices. Gambart's success is that he was able to bring art to a wider audience. Those who are not rich enough to buy an original work by a great artist can still participate in art. To do this, Gambart offers two simple and less expensive possibilities for active art participation. Buying an admission ticket for a one-off exhibition of one painting and buying a print of the work of art in question. Gambart realized this kind of exhibition, focusing on only one work, the grandeur of which is accentuated by isolating it, for the following paintings: The Horse Fair of Rosa Bonheur, The Derby Day by William Powell, Frit, and The Finding of the Savior in the Temple by William Holman Hunt. Gambart understood that the new rich like the work of contemporary artists and are reassured by it for two reasons. First, because authenticity problems are avoided because the works supplied by the dealers come directly from the artist's studio. And secondly, under the guidance of the dealers, the artists are happy to give the public what they want. These are scenes of everyday life, historical genre scenes, and animal scenes. These are all familiar, accessible subjects that are not too instructing and that please the public. Besides the exhibitions in his own gallery, Gambart also lent his cooperation to the official exhibitions. Belgium, for example, actively searched for foreign participants for the Belgian Triennial Salons. And so they called on art dealers who activated their network to obtain works of art from foreign artists. Gambart was one of them. But in addition to the presence of foreign art at national or local exhibitions, world and international exhibitions also played an important role for the reputation of an artist in his home country and the launch of their international career. Most art dealers are therefore eager to become involved in these events and to take advantage of the commercial opportunities these exhibitions create. Gombard represented, for example, Belgian artists for the World Exhibition in Paris in 1867 and 1878, and he did the same for Spanish, Dutch, English, French, and Italian artists with regard to their presence at international, national, and local exhibitions. The third tool of trade Gombard used is the press. Good art advertising and publicity via specialized art magazines is another way to increase his trade in prints and painting. Already in 1845, advertisements of his company appear in the British magazine Art Union. Magazines are interested in the latest editions of prints, and vice versa, the publisher benefits from good reviews of his new prints in widely circulated magazines. Gombard regularly sent copies of reproductions to the art journals for review, and Henry Mockford, who worked for Gombard in 1854, has been writing articles for this journal. In addition, the editor-in-chief and founder of the art journal, Samuel Carter Hall, was on the visiting committee of the French exhibitions in Gombard's gallery, as was the journalist and publisher of The Builder, George Godwin. There appears also a series of 13 articles in the art journal written by James Dufourne, Hall's right-hand man, entirely devoted to the contemporary Belgian painters who were almost all to be seen in Gombard's gallery. Another periodical, the Athenaeum, contains many reviews of the prints and winter and spring exhibitions in Pommel, published or organized by Gombard. The dealer also had a good relationship with the art critic Frederick George Stephens, who had a 40-year career at the Athenaeum. Stephens was also a member of the Pre-Raphaelite Brotherhood, whose most important members were the English painters Hunt, Millet, and Rossetti, all artists promoted by Gombard. We have limited ourselves here to a few examples of Gombard's relationship with certain art critics, but we believe that more systematic research is needed to discover the way in which Gombard used the British and foreign press to publicize his many activities. The fourth and last art dealing technique we want to talk about is the auction market. Throughout his career, Gombard regularly visited auction rooms where he acted both as a buyer and as a seller. Based on reviews of auctions in magazines, it is clear that Gombard regularly bought works of art at public auctions, which he then exhibit and offered for sale in the French gallery. Here, however, we want to emphasize the auctions at which the dealer sold part of his trading stock. Between 1846 and 1871, we found 43 auctions that mention Gombard as provenance, or in other words, where the auction lots were the property of the dealer. All these auctions took place in London, except one in Paris in 1862, and two in New York in 1866 and 1867. Until 1850, it was almost exclusively prints, and after that, more and more paintings, watercolors, and drawings were added. And after 1862, there were almost no more prints in these auctions. The question is why Gombard so often sold works from his stock at public auctions. Was it simply to renew his stock, or was it to drive up the price? Several studies about the 19th century art circulation at auctions in France come to the conclusion that certain art dealers were active in the auction circuit and influenced the prices. From a study concerning auction market in England in the second half of the 19th century, it is clear that from 1840 onwards, dealers became the main buyers and by 1800 dominated the market. The English dealers would be less active as speculators, who believed that public competition for the works of art offered at auctions produced the best results. But art speculation do exist in England, of course. The way to make a profit is to sell paintings at auctions that have previously been bought directly from the respective artists. To promote market stability, dealers also pay high prices to maintain or even increase the value of the painting of artists they have in their own stock. The study on the English auction market also points out the rarity of the dealers as seller in auctions. Yet, they report that even names of famous dealers like Gombard occasionally appear as sellers in auctions. But in the case of Gombard, we can say that this happened much more than the researchers thought. The reason they sell part of their stocks is usually due to a need for cash that they can reinvest, or the retirement or cessation of the business. Normally, traders who try to sell their stocks at auctions that they could not get rid of through their galleries get little or no reaction from colleagues or from the general public. However, there are also successful sales by dealers to dealers at auctions. 1/3 of all stock sales are bought by other dealers, which suggests that this is no coincidence. This is rather contradictory, but there must have been numerous reasons explaining transactions between dealers at auctions. Unfortunately, it is impossible to reconstruct these different motives. In the case of Gombard, who during his 25-year career appears as a seller in 43 auctions and as a buyer in countless other public sales, we suspect that the auction market provided him with a structure for speculation and also a way of obtaining liquid funds. We can conclude that through the various art dealing techniques Gombard used, he managed to democratize artist work and simultaneously monopolize its artistic and financial value. As the journalist from the Swiss and Nice Times and Italian Herald in 1898 puts it, it was Gombard who discovered how to combine philanthropy and economics. He gives the concrete example of his gardeners, whom he had maintained the gardens around his villa Le Palmier for 8 months a year, providing him with flowers and fruit. In return, they received the best weekly salary, were also allowed to sell the surplus of the harvest for their own profit. We think we can apply this theory to the relationship between Gombard and the many artists from whom he ordered paintings for which he paid handsomely. Like the gardeners, the artists also derived additional benefits from their contact with the art dealer. They could profit from one or more of the art dealing techniques used by the dealers, which made them more visible to an international audience via prints of their works, exhibitions at home and abroad, reports in the press, and or presence on the auction market. Thanks to Gombard's networks, the artists were also able to expand their own connections. Thank you very much.